It's snowing in Tyler and Beth's bedroom. Flecks of snow, tough little ice balls, more BB than flake, more gray than white in the early morning dimness, swirl onto the floorboards and the foot of the bed. Tyler awakens from a dream, which dissolves almost entirely, leaving only a sensation of queasy and peevish joy. When he opens his eyes, it seems for a moment that the skeins of snow blowing around the room are part of his dream, a manifestation of icy and divine mercy. But it is, in fact, real snow blowing in through the window he and Beth left open last night. Beth sleeps curled into the circle of Tyler's arm. He gently disengages himself, gets up to close the window. He walks barefoot across the snow-sparkled floor, doing what needs to be done. This is satisfying. He's the sensible one. In Beth, he has finally found someone more romantically impractical than he. Beth, if she woke, would in all likelihood ask him to leave the window open. She'd like the idea of their cramped, crowded little bedroom as a life-sized snow globe. Tyler shuts the window. It's barely 6 o'clock. It's white outside, everywhere. The elderly snow piles that have been, day after day, plowed to the edges of the next door parking lot, that have solidified into miniature gray mountains, touched toxically here and there with spangles of soot, are now, for now, alpine, like something out of a Christmas card. Or rather, something out of a Christmas card if you focus tightly, edit out the cocoa-colored concrete facade of the empty warehouse upon which the ghost of the word concrete is still emblazoned, although grown so faint, it's as if the building itself, so long neglected, still insists on announcing its own name. And the still slumbering street where the neon Q in the liquor store sign winks and buzzes like a distress flare. Even in this tawdry cityscape, though, this haunted, half-empty neighborhood, where the burned carcass of an old Buick has remained strangely pious in its rusted-out, gutted, and graffitied absolute uselessness for the last year on the street beneath Tyler's window, there's a gaunt beauty summoned by the pre-dawn light, a sense of compromised but still living hope, even in Bushwick. Here's a fall of new snow, serious snow, immaculate, with its hint of benediction, as if some company that delivers hush and accord to the better neighborhoods had gotten the wrong address. If you live in certain places in a certain way, you'd better learn to praise the small felicities. And living as Tyler does in this place, in this placidly impoverished neighborhood of elderly aluminum siding, of warehouses and parking lots, all utilitarian, all built on the cheap, with its just barely managing little businesses and its daunted denizens, trudging dutifully along to or from minimum wage jobs as if defeat could no longer be defeated, as if one were lucky to have anything at all. In a place like this, praise is elusive. It's difficult to stand at a window watching snow feather onto the overflowing garbage cans and the cracked cobblestones without thinking ahead to its devolution into dun-colored sludge. The brown tarns of ankle-deep street-corner puddles upon which cigarette butts and balls of foil gum wrappers, fool's silver, will float. Tyler should go back to bed. Another interlude of sleep, and who knows? He might wake into a world of more advanced, resolute cleanliness, a world wearing a still heavier white blanket over its bedrock of drudgery and ash. He's reluctant, however, to leave the window in this condition of sludgy wistfulness. He's promised he'll cut down. He's been good about it for the past couple of days, but now, right now, it's a minor metaphysical emergency. Beth isn't worse, but she isn't better either. Knickerbocker Avenue is waiting patiently through its brief interlude of accidental beauty until it can return to the slush and puddle that is its natural state. All right. This morning, he'll give himself a break. It's only a little boost at a time when a boost is needed. He goes to the nightstand, takes his vial from the drawer, and sucks up a couple of quick ones. And here it is. Here's the sting of livingness. He's back after his nightly voyage of sleep, all clarity and purpose. He's renewed his citizenship in the world of people who strive and connect, people who mean business, people who burn and want, who remember everything, who walk lucid and unafraid. He returns to the window. Here's Knickerbocker Avenue again. And yes, it will soon return to its ongoing condition of anywhereness. It's not as if Tyler has forgotten that. But the grimy impending future doesn't matter. In very much the way Beth says that morphine doesn't eradicate the pain, but puts it aside, renders it unimportant, a sideshow curiosity, mortifying. See the snake boy, see the bearded lady, but remote. And of course, a hoax. Just spirit gum and latex. Tyler's own lesser pain, the dampness of his inner workings, has been snapped dry by the coke. A moment ago, he was fuzzed out and mordant. But now, quick suck of harsh magic. He's all acuity and verve. He's shed his own costume, and the true suit of himself fits him perfectly. Tyler is a one-man audience, standing naked at a window at the start of the 21st century with hope clattering in his ribcage. It seems possible that all the unfortunate surprises have been part of an inscrutable effort, too immense to see. Some accumulation of lost chances and canceled plans and girls who were almost, but not quite. All of which seemed random at the time, but have brought him here, to this window, to this difficult but interesting life. Tyler will get a rag and wipe the melted snow off the floorboards. He'll take care of it. He will adore Beth and Barrett with more purity. He will gather and procure, take on an extra shift at the bar, praise the snow and all it touches. He will get them out of this grim apartment, sing ferociously into the heart of the world. Find an agent. Stitch it all together. Remember to soak the beans for Cassoulet. Get Beth to chemo on time. Do less coke and cut out Dilaudid entirely. Finally finish reading The Scarlet and the Black. He'll hold Beth and Barrett, console them, remind them of how little there is to worry about. Feed them. Tell them the stories that render them that much more visible to themselves. Outside, the snow shifts with a shift in the wind, and it seems as if some benign force, some vast, invisible watcher, has known what Tyler wanted the moment before he knew it himself. A sudden animation, a change, the gentle, steady snowfall taken up and turned into fluttering sheets, an airy map of the wind currents, and yes, are you ready, Tyler? It's time to release the pigeons, 5 of them, from the liquor store roof. Time to set them aflight, and then, are you watching? Turn them, silvered by early light, counter to the wind-blown flakes. Sail them effortlessly west into the agitated air that's blowing the snow toward the East River, where barges will be plowing, whitened like ships of ice through the choppy water. And yes, right, a moment later, it's time to turn the streetlights off and simultaneously bring a truck around the corner of Rock Street, its headlights still on and its flat silver top blinking little warning lights, garnet and ruby. That's perfect. That's amazing. Thank you.